If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, good evening. I'm Carol Gold. I'm here at Above the Fray. 914-803-4522 is the number. If you want to join the conversation, please do. I'm here with my co-host, as always, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
Let's talk about, you know, I titled the show, I don't know if you know this, Steve, I titled the show Good Cops, Bad Cops, Assassination Isn't the Solution. I'd said that because I think that's what just was attempted in Ferguson. It was the attempted assassination. I haven't heard, are either one of those cops, were their wounds fatal?
They weren't fatal. They lived, but they, I guess they were pretty close to being fatal, though.
So they're in serious or critical condition?
No, I think they're okay, but I just it's one of those things where the bullet hit them, you know, an inch to the right or to the left, it would have killed them. But it looks like they're both going to be fine. But they could have been much worse.
So I saw very little about the story, but what I did see really made me laugh in not a good way. It was simply a comment by Al Sharpton, and it was something to the effect of him condemning the action. But the reason I said I laughed in not a good way is, I mean, he has to be one of the most profound inciters, if that's a word, in Ferguson and around the country, but particularly after the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, one of the people who incited the most division, the most unsubstantiated rage and anger in response to not fact, but fiction as to what went down on that day between Officer Darren Williams and Michael Brown, as is evidenced by the Justice Department's recent report and finding that they could not and would not bring civil rights violations charges because there was no hate crime and there were no facts to support such a charge and that his arms were never, you know, hands up, don't shoot. This, you know, I said good cops, bad cops, because you and I have spoken on other shows, Steve, about, you know, the sort of out of control power that our police forces have across the country. We've talked about the militarization of the police force. And yet, as always, there's two sides to every story and there's balance. The need to find balance in every story. And yes, there are bad cops, and yes, our local police forces have been militarized, and yes, cops generally have either they have too much power or they've been used as a tool for politicians to have too much power. But it's also true that there are people who serve in police forces that really are there to serve. And there are people who can tell stories all across this country of police who did good things for them, police who were there when they needed them, police who interrupted crime, police who captured criminals, police who doggedly tracked down criminals. And so I think we have to look at this from a multitude of perspectives, don't you?
I agree. I think, don't get me wrong, the police have do some remarkable things, and I just think it's the nature of where our government's going, that it's just continuing to empower everybody who's on the side of the government, and to the point where the police are much more empowered than they once were, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that's where I think the real concern that I have with the police force is just the amount of power that they now have.
So then what do you think about the two cops shot in Ferguson?
You know, I would think we're probably on agreement with this, Carol. I think, you know, violence is never the solution, and killing somebody is clearly not the solution. And even the reports, you know, that came across were the two police that were shot weren't even in that didn't even work in Ferguson. They were two policemen that were brought in, I guess, from another county to help to help out. So whatever rage that was supposedly that was supposed to be directed at the police force, the Ferguson police force, it didn't achieve the goal. It was, you know, it shot two policemen that were outside of that area. Again, my take on that is just kind of what you said. As I think it's the people that are committing these crimes are brought in to incite. And I think, you know, the end goal is, yeah, maybe it's kill cops, but I think it's to start a bigger, broader trend, which I think is the more concerning aspect of the whole matter.
So the same way that we're talking about outsiders, or at least people creating a scenario that isn't factually based, because they've got an agenda, and particularly a political agenda, I'm just going to segue into the response by certain people, Howard Dean, I'm going to name one, to the letter that the Senate, the open letter to the Iranian government that the senators signed, indicating how the Constitution works in this country, and that if they enter into a treaty with Barack Obama, which they will classify it as a treaty, that it needs ratification in the Congress. And they were basically advising Iran that to enter into something that is so adverse to the best interests of the United States isn't going to get Iran what they want, because it isn't going to be ratified. And yet Howard Dean actually said that if particularly one of the sponsors of the letter, I can't think of his name right now, but he's a decorated war veteran in this country, that Tom Cotton, that if he weren't a decorated war veteran, Howard Dean would see him liable for treason. Now, to me, that's as absurd as the hands up, don't shoot thing in Ferguson. And they're not the same, but I say it's the same to me because, number one, Congress had the right to write that letter. What they wrote is factually correct. And I think they were acting in the best interest of the United States, because I think they genuinely believe that our president is entering into an appeasement-based negotiation with an appeasement mindset that will be harmful to the country. And yet the media, and some in the media and some on the left, are trying to spin this as treason, when in fact I think there's almost an equally strong, I think there's a stronger argument that the opposite is true. And in fact, I listened this morning, Steve, to a letter written by a prisoner of conscience in Iran. The letter was smuggled out to an organization here in the United States. I believe it's called Iranians. I can't think of the name of the organization. Basically, it's an organization of Iranians here in the United States who are trying to still help those in Iran who have been wrongfully imprisoned for everything from homosexuality to their opposition to the Khomeini regime. And the letter was to the president of the United States. It was written to Barack Obama by someone who is still in prison in Iran. He's a journalist. And he wrote this letter, and the letter said, basically, I'm going to paraphrase, written in the first person to the president, Barack Obama, that you abandoned us during the Green Revolution when we marched in the streets of Iran to bring down the mullahs and the religious based agenda of the government, and we marched, we risked our lives, and you walked away, you left us, and you turned Iran over to more radicals. And he said further in the letter, he said to the president, you've spoken to, you negotiate with, and every time you speak to or meet with or negotiate with, you make it worse and you give them more power and more credibility. This is from inside Iran. So if our senators are writing a letter basically trying to counterbalance what Barack Obama is on a mission to do, I hardly call that treason, but I do see that the media and certain Democratic entrenched Democrats who have an agenda, which is to hate everything that isn't Democrat and everything that isn't progressive, that they have that agenda to try to make all opposition anti-American.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's, you know, it's absolutely despicable. I mean, the people are despicable. They really are. It's we basically live in a country that everything is politicized. And the fact is that the ratifying treaties, you know, dates back to, you know, I want to say to the Constitution, that it was put in there for a reason. Essentially, you know, the government is set up. Essentially, there's checks and balances on the government. And the whole point of the Constitution is to limit political power. It's really what it is. It's to limit the powers and provide the freedoms to the people. And what just drives me crazy is how quickly both parties will acquiesce their rights to the people and just completely cave when their president or the person in their party wants to get something done. This is not a political matter by any stretch of the imagination. This is a treaty that Obama is not a dictator. He represents the United States. And because he has limits to his power, it has to be ratified by the, if I'm not mistaken, by the Congress and the Senate. They've got to ratify the treaty. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to strike his own deal based on a vision that he has or a vision that he believes the world should be like or should act like. And because of his belief and his powers of him being able to negotiate these types of deals, that justice will prevail in his own mind, which I think is, you know, again, part of that narcissistic trait that Obama has. But what really, you know, rankles me is, again, this, you know, these Democrats right now who look at the matter as political in nature, not realizing it, and, you know, in 2 years' time there can be a Republican in the presidency who can do something just as bad, and what would, you know, be just as disturbing as the Republicans would file under him. The people have to be represented, and there has to be some outcry. And I think equally despicable is the people in the media that fall in line because everything that Obama does is good, and everything who's against Obama is a racist or somebody who's counter to what they believe. I think I'm at my limits here with this. Go ahead, Carol.
I think it's and Steve, just back up from your mic a little bit because there's certain words that you're saying are kind of getting. I think you're just too close to the mic. Anyway, we do this show all the time, and we address things from the perspective that we each have, and these first two stories can be very frustrating to listen to because we're really talking about manipulation and control and fiction versus fact. But I think there is cause for hope, and I think there is cause for empowerment. And I say this for two reasons. One, recent data shows that the average person's in this country, the average person's time that they spend watching television every week has taken the greatest drop it's taken since these statistics have been compiled, the greatest drop in the last 2 years. So people are moving away from network news. They're moving away from mainstream kind of broadcasts, and they're just like kids do on their iPods, creating their own playlist. People are doing the same thing with podcasts. They're doing the same thing with news. People are gravitating and selecting out what it is they really want to expose themselves to, what it is they really want to hear, and getting rid of that which they don't. Now, hopefully, what people will be evolving into is realizing that garbage in, garbage out. Whether it's pornography or it's conspiracy theories, it doesn't really matter. If you keep putting this junk into your system, you're going to have a response proportionate to what you're putting in. So hopefully people will get smarter and smarter with what they expose themselves to in terms of media input, data input, sensory input. But also, And I realize we're at a critical juncture and things can always go either way. The other thing is, I heard something today and it rocked me, but I assume it's true. An African Bushman with an iPhone has greater power to reach the world, literally reach out to the world, than Bill Clinton had in his last year of his presidency. That's the power of the technology. And so even though we talk a lot about government manipulation and conspiracy theorists talk about the Illuminati and end of days people talk about Armageddon, even though all of that conversation is going on, there really is no reason for anyone to feel disempowered. Because if you've got access to the internet, if you've got an iPhone, an iPad, an Android, a monitor, and a CPU, the world is your oyster. There's nothing you can market. If you got an idea and you go to Kickstarter, there's nothing you can't get funding for, assuming you've got a viable idea. So, in a way, we have never been more empowered. Now, maybe because it's new and we're feeling our way, we're still trying to figure out, and we make a lot of mistakes and we fall down and we use it incorrectly because it is brand new in the sense that it's never been so readily available before and so widespread before. So I think that we just happen to be living in a transition period when we're moving out of traditional politics, we're moving away from dictatorship, we're moving away from the control of the individual by select groups of people. And while some people say we're on the verge of a new world order where only a few people are going to be in charge and everybody else is going to be a slave, I happen to believe that we're on the edge, yes. But which way we tilt, in a way, is up to us. We need a certain amount of people awake and realizing that as much as we wind up enslaved to a select few, so could we wind up free as we've never been before. It all depends on what we do with what we have. And I think that's a much more optimistic way to look at where we are than to think that the end of the world is around the corner.
Yeah, but like this, I'm not saying that I don't believe the you know, it's the end of the world. But what I do believe is that there is a full-on press and there's a full-on pressure to get the people to believe in a certain way and to act in a certain way. And, you know, I would call it, you know, somewhat of a conditioning that takes place over a course of many, many, many years through the education system, what we're taught, how we're taught certain things. You know, the unfortunate thing, I think a lot of people have been conditioned to believe certain things that what I would call you have facts and opinions. And how should I say this? Let me demonstrate it by a story. In World War II, one of the main reasons, to make a long story short, one of the main reasons why the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor was basically the U.S. You know, a lot of people believe the U.S. and England had a plan to dominate the world, in which they were succeeded. And one of the things that the U.S. did was they limited the amount of oil that Japan had access to. Roosevelt brought the fleet into Pearl Harbor, where he was stationed in California. And the combination of those two things led to a massive war. Now, what we're taught in schools and what we're taught to believe is that the Japanese were the aggressors, that they acted out of self-interest, a nationalistic interest, and it wasn't about the oil, and the U.S. responded in kind. Well, facts are facts and opinions are opinions. And the reason I'm belaboring this point is that the U.S., and I would say the people who are in the progressives and the socialists, are trying to get people to believe certain things that are their opinions and not facts. And I think what's happening is that there is a much larger progressive movement that exists in the country that didn't exist even 20, 30 years ago. And if you just look at cultural markers, for example, if you look at the books, the media, the movies, the TV shows, that are still popular all have agendas that are essentially anti-conservative and anti-family. It's really much harder to find shows or programming that have those values. And my point in saying this is that after many, many, many years, you know, it's hard for people to realize what conservative values are, what real freedom is, what individual liberty is, what individual freedoms are. And so really what we have now is a bit of an agenda still by the progressives to say, hey, you know, Obama's one of our own. He believes what we believe, and we're going to defend him at all costs. I think there's an element that you're saying that people have a lot more power now. But I would argue there's an element that people are probably, I don't know if this is even a word, unknowledgeable, or have so little knowledge of what the Constitution was really about, what individual liberties are really about, what natural law is about, the basis of what makes a successful society. I think essentially we've been cut off from those things, and that's where I think my concern lies.
Well, I will agree with you that the campaign has been insidious for a very long time to undermine through the culture and through the education system. And I think an example that was so brought home to me this week, and I actually commented on it on the internet, although not on our site, maybe I will write a blog post about it today, is that we're seeing this blatant and overt anti-Semitism on college campuses across the country, probably most recently out in California, where
UCLA.
They try, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, UCLA.
Yeah, with the Jewish girl who was, I think, the head of the student body or whatever it was, and they tried to prevent her because she was Jewish, saying that she couldn't come and be a fair broker or have an objective opinion. I mean, it was pure anti-Semitism, and it was eventually it was reversed, and she was elected the president of the student body. But this, people were saying, you know, how could this be, and where did this come from? And in the 1980s, AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee in Washington, D.C., AIPAC hired a young man who was in his 20s, late 20s, named Jonathan Kessler, and they hired him for the sole purpose of traveling the United States to college campuses and talking to student bodies in an attempt to counterbalance what AIPAC learned was an Arab plan to infiltrate our universities and buy department chairs, buy chairmanships of departments, and infiltrate through the curriculum and through the campus culture anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. Now, this was in the 1980s. They've had 30 years of this virtually unopposed, opposed by AIPAC, but merely one organization against all of the kinds of money that, you know, they bought a chair at Harvard, they bought a chair at Stanford, they bought departments and they affected curriculum, but they were also infiltrating the college culture. And so this anti-Semitism that is now blatant across this country on many, many, too many college camp, well, one would be too many, but too many college campuses is a 30-year, is the result of a seed that was planted 30 years ago and has been nurtured and fed and fundamentally unopposed and unrecognized by academia. And if they recognized it, they didn't care because they were left or progressive also. This is very, very, as dangerous as it is, it's almost tragic because if AIPAC knew it, it could have been known by anyone or any organization, and it could have been dealt with. Now the genie's out of the bottle. Now you've got an entire generation, maybe almost two, of college students who have been indoctrinated into anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism, and anti-everything that has to do with Jews or Israel, and purely pro-Palestinian, without even understanding the history.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that goes back to the point that I was making, that I think there's generations that are essentially completely cut off from the truth. To give a story right on target, my daughter is doing a project, and she's in high school here in Texas, about McCarthy, and she came to the conclusion from the hearings in the 1950s that McCarthy was actually a really bad guy. What he did was wrong, and he used the power of the government to berate people and abuse his power. And although there's kernels of truth to what she's saying, I asked her if she knew the whole story, if she knew, you know, what the conclusion of the story was. And she didn't really know what the conclusion was. I said, well, you know, the Russians released their secretive documents in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken, they're called the Verona Files, the Verona Tapes. And all the people that McCarthy accused of being communists were communists.
Yeah, he was right. It turned out McCarthy was right.
But there again, the school was only teaching half the story. They only taught the story about how McCarthy had abused some of his positions of power in order to get these guys, and maybe he was a bit self-promoting. But at the end of the day, the facts were the facts. He was correct in who he accused of being a communist. And so my point is that, you know, here's a small sample in my household where I can see, are they teaching the material? Yes, they are. But are they teaching you the whole material? No, they're not. And so that's my point. I think we have this generation, or I should say 2 to 3 generations now, that again, that are not fully taught or fully aware of, you know, of the founding of the country and really, you know, how the country was meant to run by our founders.
So in the last few minutes, Steve, I just want to quickly, because it's so important, touch on Grover Norquist. You know, he's the fair tax guy, and he is he's on the board of the NRA, and I actually think he might be president of the NRA. It has now come to light that he is a shill for the Muslim Brotherhood. He is a front man for Islamic extremism. Did you know this?
I did not know this. Is Grover Norquist?
Grover Norquist, and that he's married to a Palestinian woman whose family has been very active in the Muslim Brotherhood. He is connected to all of the radical sheikhs and the radical mosques in this country that are promoting radical Islam, and he's a very bad guy. And the board of the NRA, the NRA members are about to reelect their board. And I have heard some pretty high up people say that if he is reelected, and these are people who are lifetime members of the NRA, they will terminate their membership because he is a bad, bad guy. And he has been instrumental also in getting some of these people placed in our current government. This is pretty shocking stuff.
I've never heard of this. It's incredible.
Yeah. So everybody knows him as the fair tax guy, but it's a small fraction of what he's really into and what he's really doing. And I think the website, if I'm not mistaken, it might be thinking is it Strategic Freedom? I can't think of the name of the website, the expose that was done on him, and it's all documented, it's all factual. This isn't hype, this isn't smoke. This is the real deal. He's a very dangerous man. And so I encourage people, especially if you're NRA members or if you're pro-gun and you think he's a good guy, or you're fair tax and you think he's your guy, begin to look into Grover Norquist, who he really is, and the damage that he has been part and parcel of in relationship to radical Islam. Steve, good show. We covered a lot. Hopefully we gave people something to think about. And, of course, we'll be back here again Monday evening at Above the Fray podcast. In the meantime, we hope everyone has a good weekend, and keep your thinking caps on. Do your own homework. Don't listen to anybody. You can listen, but don't believe anybody until you verify for yourself. As Reagan would say, have said, trust and verify, or trust but verify. Good show, Steve. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you again Monday night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.